Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if New York's rules for sharing evidence in criminal justice cases are now more tilted in favor of prosecutors than those in Texas, is it time for reform? That's the case that those who want to change what's called Article 240 are trying to make in Albany before the end of the legislative term in June, and it's the headline of a recent article in City Limits by Kate Pastor, freelance journalist and former editor-in-chief of the Riverdale Press, whose article, "Will New York Follow Texas in Criminal Justice Reform?" and who joins me now. Welcome back to WNYC, Kate Pastor.
Thank you, Brian.
So we're talking about criminal prosecutions and the evidence that the DA's offices are required to share with defense attorneys. What is that requirement?
So the requirement is actually pretty restrictive in New York State. The requirement is that evidence be, specifically witness evidence, be turned over right before a witness testifies, and that basically all evidence that the defense gets is they have to file motions for. So nothing is, in fact, just turned over to the defense as it would be in, for instance, a civil case or in many other states in the country.
So you use the example of that movie, My Cousin Vinny, which hinged on the attorney played by Joe Pesci finding out the witness against his clients couldn't have actually seen what she said she did. That couldn't happen in New York?
Right. So they went out to interview these witnesses because they knew who – or a witness because they knew who this witness was, and they were able to go and do their own research. They wouldn't necessarily have access to who the witness – you know, to the name and information about the witness in New York State.
And this evidence we're talking about is called Brady material in the criminal justice world because the Supreme Court ruled back in 1963 in the case Brady versus Maryland that prosecutors had to disclose all evidence – that could be, quote, material to the defense. But deciding when in the process and what was deemed material was left to the states.
Right. That is basically left to the prosecution. So the prosecutor has to decide what is going to make the defense's case. And it's a case that the defense hasn't really begun to put together yet. So that is a very difficult situation and can lead to prosecutors withholding information and being able to say that they deemed it unmaterial.
And this is contentious and the subject of lawsuits and political debates. And so as of May of last year, Texas reformed its criminal justice code along these lines. And part of the point of your article is that New York's rules now favor prosecutors more than Texas's do?
That's right. I mean, that's one point. And I'll be actually looking into sort of where New York fits and in the more national scheme of things in a story for thecrimereport.org, which is going to be coming out soon. But as far as New York is concerned, I think actually in the last week we've seen two cases where if discovery had been turned over more automatically, there would not have been either a dismissal or an exoneration in one case after 25 years.
Tell me those stories.
So in one case, somebody was in jail for 25 years when there was evidence in a case file that had him in Florida when the crime took place.
That's in the headlines this morning.
Exactly. And it was, you know, sitting there in the case file, and yet it wasn't, you know, the defense wasn't able to use it to defend.
The prosecutors knew that he was nowhere near the scene of the crime?
Well, in this case, they said it was overlooked, and that's the leeway that the law allows. Prosecutors can overlook things, and certainly that can happen. A case in the Bronx, a judge has now barred a specific ADA from the courtroom because supposedly she overlooked some very crucial information after a defendant was sitting in Rikers for over 8 months. And, you know, whether or not it was overlooked is less important. If the entire case file had been turned over to the defense attorney, there would have been no opportunity to overlook that information.
Right. And the same thing with the Florida case. If there was this document dump to the defense, they would have figured out.
You'd hope.
That their guy was in Florida. You would hope. And this Bronx judge just banned an assistant district attorney from his courtroom over violations of this standard?
Well, it seems, yeah, that's what just happened. And, you know, I think part and parcel to this issue is the fact that at least in New York City, there's a lot of question about what prosecutors' offices actually do when there are these violations. So not only are they given this power over the cases, It's really unclear whether there's any discipline doled out internally when there are these types of violations. So, you know, what incentive do prosecutors have other than, you know, their own morals and ethics to make sure that they share this vital information?
Listeners, anybody want to chime in on this? Are you a lawyer, criminal defense lawyer, prosecutor, former prosecutor, judge, retired judge, part of the criminal justice system and have to deal with the consequence of these rules on a regular basis? 212-433-WNYC. Are there practices in New York, rules that allow the prosecutors to hold on to evidence? What's the word? Exculpatory?
Yes.
Exculpatory evidence. Too much. 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. Give us a call. So what would be a specific difference between, let's say, New York's rules on this and Texas's rules on this? It sounds like the premise is the same. You have to turn over these kinds of evidence, share them with the defense. So when does New York not have to do that if you're a prosecutor, and Texas now does?
Well, I don't know too much about Texas's specific law, but I can say that in New York, none of it has to be turned over automatically, and it doesn't have to be done before at arraignment or when trial begins. So it's not only an issue of what gets turned over. Many judges have interpreted the current law to Article 240 to be a sort of maximum of what they can provide when some of the people who actually changed the law in 1979 said that that was supposed to be a minimum. So very little information is actually shared, and it happens quite late in the game comparatively to other states.
It's a very open-minded concept in American law, right? That in our adversarial criminal justice system, mm-hmm. that's what it officially is described as. It's this side against this side, and each side is trying to prove the other wrong. In our adversarial criminal justice system, the prosecution is required to share evidence that hurts its case with the defense. I mean, it's something to admire, at least on paper. And it says something about the role of the prosecutor, at least ideally. And I think good prosecutors will wax very eloquent about how they see their job in the American justice system. It's not just to win cases. It's to see the justice is done.
Well, that's true, although our system also champions the idea of having a right to a defense. And that defense isn't necessarily fully realized when information isn't shared early on. So even in the case where all of the information is turned over, many, many cases are pleaded out before trial begins. So in a case where you have no idea what the evidence is against you, you're right, that is a great ideal. But it doesn't pan out in practice if you have no information about the evidence.
Do you know if other countries have this requirement, other liberal democracies?
I do not.
Claire in Suffolk County, you're on WNYC. Hello, Claire.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to point out a little short concept here that at the end of the day, lawyers, although we are hired or appointed to represent our positions, our clients, very vigorously, we are also officers of the court. And this is just something that I think we have to remind one another about on occasion, and I have done so, that at the end of the day, we have to be forthcoming because we are officers of the court, and we owe an obligation to the court system to be upfront.
Has it come up in any particular case in your career that you would cite that's particularly dramatic or emblematic?
Well, I've been doing this for 30 years, and in the early part of my career, I did some criminal work because the firm I was with did some nothing high end like high end felonies, but sure it is, and one of the big problems that we have in this country is on the one hand we're trying to expedite justice by doing a lot of plea bargaining, and I understand all that, but at the end of the day, there are times when the prosecutors are pushing you to accept a plea. And at that stage, many clients just don't have the resources to say, you know, show me your hand. And so they don't have to show their hand because we engage in plea bargaining, maybe to the extreme.
I'm so glad you brought that up because that's another central point of your article. And we've done reporting at WNYC News on the number of defendants who are charged with relatively small things but will get them behind bars for a while and criminal records. And they don't have the resources to go out and prove that they're innocent. And I'm talking about the minority of people who are actually innocent of the crimes that they're accused of. And they say, I know I'm innocent, but I'm going to cop a plea because if I don't, I can't prove my innocence. I don't have the resources to go do the investigation and get, you know, a lawyer to dig up counter evidence. And then I'm going to get sentenced longer.
Absolutely, especially anybody with a prior, anybody who has, you know, who's faced with something so extreme that they figure that they might as well cut their losses by going ahead and pleading guilty. The case in the Bronx of this man who was not, you know, who was awaiting trial in Rikers for over 8 months, he could have easily pleaded guilty, and that would have been a case where, you know, you have somebody who pleaded guilty based on the information that they had but just didn't have all the information available to them.
John in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Good morning, John.
Hi, Brian. The one point I wanted to make about, you know, changing the Brady rule is our biggest challenge in urban law enforcement is getting witnesses to trust us, especially in a violence-prone area like the Bronx is. I mean, that's in homicide and shooting investigations, getting people in the community to trust us and come forward with what they know is our biggest challenge. And right now, we can say that we're going to keep your identity secret until we go to trial, which may be a year and a half, 2 years away. If I can't tell that to a witness, they're not going to talk to me. And if they don't talk to me, we're not going to have the case. All the crime scene evidence in the world, all the forensic evidence in the world is worth nothing, especially under the state statutes, without a witness. Our cases are all based on witnesses.
You're making a very important point, and I'll note that in Kate's piece in City Limits, she acknowledges that D.A. Cy Vance, the Manhattan D.A., says, look, evidence rules protect witnesses from retribution, which is, I think, the point that you're making. So, Kate, if the evidence in contention is the identity of a witness or involves disclosing the identity of a witness, isn't that a concern, that sharing those names will discourage or endanger their lives when they're so loath to come forward anyway in these, you know, fraught, violent circumstances?
I think, first of all, that there's no doubt that that is a legitimate concern. The question is, how do you balance that with a defendant's right to a defense? And the fact that New York is so such an outlier nationally does lead you to sort of look at what's happened in other states. Are they unable to prosecute cases? I think that, you know, like I said, I'll be looking a little bit more into that, but it seems that there are ways around it. And in cases where a prosecutor is particularly concerned about the safety of a witness, there are ways to conceal the identity, even if these reforms are taken up.
So where does this stand? Is this a matter for the legislature? And may they, in fact, take this up in Albany before the end of the term in June?
They may. There's definitely a big push to have it taken up right now. It, this is not the first time there's been a big push. There seems to be a sort of reform moment at hand. I think a lot of the news stories that we're talking about, even just today in the news, these types of stories, the sort of publicity around exonerations has changed the way the public has seen it. And so there may be a little bit more sort of grassroots pressure in Albany than there has been in the past.
Kate Pastor, freelance journalist. Her article, Will New York Follow Texas in Criminal Justice Reform, is in the new City Limits magazine. Thank you very much, Kate.
Thank you.